crazy country, Telstra MobileNet Digital presents Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and Tony Martin.
And today, Mick's got a few pointers for the Pakistani cricket team. I've got news of a new do-it-yourself genetic engineering breakthrough. Kel driver Robin Archer, I think she's changed her name following her rather embarrassing performance in these... We've got all the behind-the-scenes action from those riveting AFI awards. We're on the final stretch of Duet with Pete this week. We've got news of a new horror lurking in our doonas. We'll fire up another Radio Gladiators, and joining us on the panel, it's doodle merchant Michael Learning. Yes, all this and more coming up on the program. The doctors are demanding be made legally available for genuine therapeutic purposes. Martin Malloy. What is love? Hadaway, afternoon all, and welcome to another week of it, another week of Martin Malloy with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, a man whose performance in the Adelaide Celebrity Grand Prix was cut short when he was nudged off the chicane by a bitter and vengeful Greg Matthews, Mick Malloy.
Yeah, it's not over yet. So it's going to look like Mad Max by the time we finish this little stout.
Okay, well, Robin Archer was involved in that, and we'll hopefully have her on the phone in just a few minutes telling us about all the action of the Celebrity Grand Prix. But, Mick, I believe there's action of a different sort in another sporting arena.
Tone, the big summer of cricket has posted its first result in world. What an absolutely miserable, disgraceful, lay down and roll over like a dog kind of performance from those, well, incorrigible, mischievous, how'd you like to earn a quick five, a group of ratbags calling themselves the Pakistani cricket team? How do you explain a performance like that? What? They've been offering each other money to play poorly now, have they? If that's the case, they're all bloody millionaires right now. They'll be kicking back on a boat in the Bahamas, having a good laugh as they drink a toast and light their cigars with $100 notes. Because they crumbled like weak-kneed Nancy boys who know about as much about cricket as the bloke sitting beside me here, T. Martin. No, I mean it, Tone. Put on the whites, buddy, and you could be opening the batting for Pakistan in the next test.
Well, don't think I haven't been asked, Mickey.
Well, come on. What do you say? We'll make you captain. You could be the next Imran Khan.
Sure, you'd need a new nickname. I mean, you know, Lion of Lahore is good, but I'm looking at you and I'm thinking more something from the marsupial family.
We'd make you captain. You'd get to set the field. Yeah. You could have some fun with that instead of, you know, your standard three slip. Gully and extra cover, you could arrange them so when viewed from above, they spelled out the word Hasselhoff.
That could be good.
You're reading my mind.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you want to break up a partnership, maybe your famous Endure formation, you could ask the guys fielding the slips maybe just to turn around and face the other way. So as you came in to bowl, you could just have a good laugh checking out the bump crack, bark out a few instructions, you know, hey, buddy, show us another couple of inches. Come on. Catches win matches. And, well, as for your bowling, I don't know much about your mystery ball, but I know for a fact you're capable of peeling off a few mystery eructations. That'd keep them guessing. Wardy's got the flipper. You've got the mysterious Pavarotti. Batsman would be sitting around in the pavilion trying to work out your Fortensky for hours.
Now, can this work, Mickey, or is this just a wild, whimsical notion? I mean, is there really a place for me on the Pakistan cricket team?
Well,
I'm trying to get a mental picture and it's not happening.
It could work. It could be fun, Tone. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, in an attempt to get an early breakthrough, you could instruct your spinners to, I don't know, incorporate the chicken tonight dance into their run-up. And when it comes to fielding, I'm sure you could employ some of your favourite trust exercises to good effect. You know that one about the canary with the broken wing?
When
fielding, you'd say, hey, careful with that, buddy. Don't break the wing. And it's like useless.
I'm pretending to write these ideas down, Mickey.
Well, it couldn't be any worse than the current display. This is my point.
You could get yourself involved in a bit of a bribery scandal. That'd put you in good with the packies. You could attend a press conference where you deny offering anyone a free pack of CDs and a Sony Discman. And as skipper, well, I suppose there's nothing to stop you approaching other players, removing your hat and belting them around the ears with it, going, Gilligan!
Well, good idea.
It's a slow news day, Tone. Indulge me. You'd love it. And, well, Tone, I don't think I need to tell you, a couple of games over summer, and, well, those bozos down at the Advanced Air Studios might start returning your calls.
Carnival, that's Natalie Merchant here on Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and me, Tony Martin, the new captain of the Pakistan cricket team. Apparently, my application's gone through, no worries.
And you've changed into the white. So it's good to see.
Have indeed. Now, listen, I don't know how many people saw this story in the paper last week, Mickey. Did you spot this one? Couple picks
sex of twins.
Mm.
A Victorian couple has become the first in Australia to choose the sex of their baby. Using an embryo sex selection technique at Monash IVF in Melbourne, the woman who prefers to remain anonymous is now 20 weeks pregnant with healthy twin girls. It is only the eighth time ever in the world that this technique has been used to select a baby's sex. Now, this is primarily for couples with genetic defects that affect only one sex, but is it a good thing? That's what I'm asking. In the future, are people planning for a few Litlins going to go, oh, look, I'm sick of the toilet seat being left up. Let's get some chicks happening. Call a lab. Or, you know, Auntie Peg's called. She's just crocheted half a dozen tiny blue jumpsuits. We better make it a bloke, I think. I think that's good. Is it going to be as simple as going to the cafe bar and punching in your requirements? Darling, feeling adventurous? Let's go for one of them Channel 9 two-headed babies this time, eh? All right, white with two it is. Or will it be more like popping down the showroom and having someone take you through a few swatches? Redhead, yeah, that goes well with the decor in the nursery. What do you think, honey? I'm leaning towards the brown. Can you show us on the simulator what he'd look like in the capsule in the Vitara? Oh, no, no, see, he's clashing with the upholstery back to square one. Is it master race time? That's what I'm asking. Could you plan for, say, a whole footy team? Will we see record company execs down the IVF creating the next silver chair in a petri dish? I mean, how specific will these selections become as the boffins get more sure-footed with the gene work? Will IVF become more like KFC? Hello, welcome to Fertile Jacks. Can I take your order, please? Yes, we like the twins. Sex? Oh, one of each. Height? Make them shortish. We've got a lot of low ceilings down the beach house. Eyes? One of each, maybe. Occupation? Grand Prix drivers? Is that a possibility? Oh, there'll be a wait on Grand Prix drivers. Yeah, what have you got? Oh, parking inspectors? Plenty of those. Channel 10 newsreader? Ambassador to Nigeria? Oh, no, we might just go for a TBA on occupation. Just make him short, blonde, tidy and punctual. Oh, and good at blackjack. We don't want to have to carry them through uni. All right, sir, that's twins to go. Would you like sweet corn with that? Well, they always ask for sweet corn.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want sweet corn no matter what. Yeah, anyway. But no, thanks. Okay, that'll be 9 months. And if you could proceed to the first window and just leave a sample. Have a nice day.
If you like it brown.
Malloy, where it's time for a Martin Malloy ad break.
Are you a great big dumb guy, desperate to appear intelligent despite your every utterance prompting an unfavourable comparison with a pair of short planks? Then come to CPSM, completely pointless spectacle manufacturers. Every pair of CPSM non-prescription glasses is totally useless when it comes to improving your vision, but can instantly add 50 points to the IQ of even the most lunk-headed footballer, film star, musician, or TV presenter. CPSM. Our clients include Sylvester Stallone, Jason Donovan, David Rain, and Radio's Tony Martin. Do you, like many Australians, suffer from an attention deficit, the common household doona? Remember when it used to be our friend? A snuggly warm companion on a cold winter's night. Now, according to exhaustive TV and radio advertisements, it's an unhygienic monster, laying host to any number of dust mites, lice, insects, possums, fugitives from justice, and entire military juntas plotting the overthrow of our duly elected government. That's why you should call the Australian Quilt Police. Unlike those other quilt companies, we don't just take your doona away and blow the contents round in one of those lotto ball machines. We take it to a secret location where it's thoroughly searched and interrogated. Then, if we don't like what we find, it's subjected to all manner of electroshock techniques until months later, it's ready to return to society, a changed doona. So if you fear your doona may be harbouring enemies of the state, call the Australian Quilt Police and we'll be round to punch the crap out of it. At last, there's a fast, effective way to avoid pain without drowsiness. Simply refrain from watching televised Australian award shows.
That's Denny Hines on Martin Malloy with It's All Right. And just hearing Denny launching into a tune there just reminds me, for some reason, the duet with Pete is entering its third and final week.
Look out.
And your chance to sing with Mr. Copperart live on national radio. Make your family proud, people. That's in the next hour. And we'll also have Michael Loonig popping in, a cartoonist. He's got a new book in. He'll be in to give us a bit of a clinic on how to draw stuff in the next hour. And now, the Celebrity Grand Prix happened in Adelaide over the weekend, and as we mentioned last week, Russell Gilbert was taking part, and he was supposed to be reporting on the aftermath for us. But what's happened to Russell, Mick?
Russell's still in his coma, I'm afraid. Nothing to do with the race. It was out drinking the night before.
Oh, right.
And, yeah,
the night before.
Aren't good. Absolutely.
Not the night after.
Oh, no.
Okay, well, hopefully he'll be back to tell us about that when he emerges from the coma. But in the meantime, we've got somebody else who took part in the Celebrity Grand Prix. It's Australia's foremost woman of letters, Robin Archer. Robin, are you there?
I am.
How do you like the intro?
Oh, it was beautiful, except you should have said foremost woman of French letters, shouldn't you?
Oh, okay. We like to keep it clean before the halfway mark here on the program.
Sorry.
Now, Robin, how'd you go?
Oh, look, it was a hard tussle up the back. It really was.
Oh, so you started up the back?
I started up the back and I stayed there all the way and I was fighting it out with Maggie Beer, who's a well-renowned chef in South Australia, and Poppy King, the lipstick queen. We were going for it. I mean, there was disgrace. It was going to be a big shame job if any of us didn't go over last.
Right. And so were you involved in any of the shenanigans? Because a few people came off the track.
Oh, yes, a few people whose names will not be mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, much beloved of South Australians.
Yes, and I think television identity Sam Newman had a bit of a
prank. Mentioned that name. Oh, dear, dear, dear. I tell you what, we all came round the bend, and just as we came round the bend, we saw Mr. Newman's bent car and thought, well, I hope he's not injured, but then a big smile broke out on every driver.
And was he wearing his hilarious ballet tutu at the time?
Oh, I don't think so. I think he was well protected. This is very serious business, you know.
I'm sure.
Had our fireproof woolen long underwear, everything.
Did you get to keep that, Robin?
We do. I mean, I get so many requests for pieces to be auctioned that I'm sure that someone is going to want those long underwears.
Absolutely. I'll put in a bid for
I don't think anyone will want Russell Gilbert's, because the instructors kept saying to us, now watch for those skid marks. They keep pointing to his long underwear.
Oh, that's the Gilbo we know
Absolutely.
And love, Robin.
This is the man we love.
And did you have to practice? Did they take you out and practice? Or
Every day. I've been locked up for 1 week with all these sporting people, and let me tell you that the boys don't have a total claim on testosterone.
Really?
Those sporting women, they're different.
Well, they're very kind of blokey in a way, aren't they?
Oh, they're unbelievable. Total, this competition. I mean, it was fantastic to be with them, but it took me 2 days to find out that I haven't got a competitive bone in my body. It was fantastic.
And what kind of speeds do you reach in the Celebrity Grand Prix?
I was doing 160 up Brabham Street.
Wow.
And I was cornering at 90. I've never done that in my life. Out of my mind. But you see, what I reckon about the celebrity race, it's amazing. My mother has been that worried. You know, she's talking to me every day saying, oh, Rob, look after yourself. Don't, you know, don't be too dangerous. Then when it's all over, I ring her up and she says, I wasn't very interesting. Nobody paid. I mean, it's just totally schizophrenic attitude.
Well, that's why people go to the races, they say, because there's always the chance of an accident.
It is. Well, it even crossed my mind. Those big jets went past over the top. The first thing that came in my mind is, I wonder what it would look like if it had exploded above my head. Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
And were there any dirty tricks? Like, who were the celebrities to watch out for?
Well, we all knew that, see, Wally and Ian Murray and Grant, who got the first three places, they actually drive seriously in their spare time.
Oh, yeah.
They've been on the track before, so we were watching out for them. But Sam, we knew, was going to gun it. Benny Elias was a bit of a danger. Kirsty Marshall's very dangerous indeed.
And what about that Tracy Curo?
Hey, well, Tracy Curo wasn't in it. It ended up being Tracy Dale.
Oh, okay.
But Tracy Dale's fantastic. She was the first woman over the line. Mm. We all had our money on Kirsty Marshall, but she got panged by Gary Neewon. He did her in.
All right. Now, will you be coming to Melbourne for the Melbourne Celebrity Grand Prix?
Oh, look, unfortunately, the Melbourne Grand Prix is on at exactly the same time as the Adelaide Festival.
I'll
have to be there for that. Now, I mean, I had hoped by my participation in this race to bridge the gap, make my personal vote for bridging the gap between the arts and sport. Mm-hmm. But I've now realised that there's a really good reason why artists don't play sport, because we've got different DNA, totally.
Maybe you could organise the opening of the Adelaide Festival to incorporate, you know, some of the great artists from all over the world around Adelaide.
The Drive Safe Australia team who taught us, and they were absolutely fantastic instructors, they've already agreed for me to invent, I'm going to commission a multimedia interactive Grand Prix event in Adelaide for the 98 Festival.
Yeah.
You can stand there and you can be wobbled up and down and you can just stand and be tortured for 5 minutes. And everyone will just think it's like the old days.
Well, let's see. Maybe you could get Wally Lewis and Grant Kenny into a production of Macbeth or something.
Oh,
kind of even things up.
Listen, mate, they'd be in anything, to say nothing of Russell Gilbert and Sam Newman.
What's more dangerous, Robin, organising an artistic festival or driving in a celebrity Grand Prix?
Absolutely organising an artistic festival. No worries.
Well, good luck with it, and congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we've been speaking to racing champion, Robin Archer here on Martin Molloy. We'll be back soon with Radio Gladiators.
Fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
Now, we were talking Celebrity Grand Prix with Robin Archer there, and obviously the Celebrity Grand Prix will be an event at Melbourne, will it, Mickey?
I believe it's going to Melbourne.
It's going to be, you know what I like about the Grand Prix in Melbourne? Apparently the whole thing's going to be paid for by transponders. Jeff Kennett's going to attach the transponders to all of the cars in the race.
Great.
And every time they do a circuit, they'll have $5 deducted from their bank account. So
you better watch out for a few of those red light cameras,
oh,
too.
You'll have the speed cameras
going. Yeah.
The whole thing will be self-financing. But obviously there will be a celebrity race. And I've got the list of celebrities that took part in the Adelaide one in front of me. And I haven't heard of half of these people. That's no celebrity Grand Prix as far as I'm concerned. I think for Melbourne, we've got to attract some bigger names. And that's what we want the listeners to do today. Call us with the celebrities you'd like to see, just one each, in the Grand Prix, and why. Why would you like to see him in there? Do we want to give any examples or is it
do
best?
Do we have any? Well, was Greg Matthews in that one?
No, he's not.
Well, I'd like to see him in the Melbourne one. I mean, you know, you'd save money on helmets. There's one less you'd have to get.
I'd like to see the four kinsmen out of mothballs and just driving around together in a...
But which one drives? You've got the other three in the back.
Well, they have a kinsman slap fight up the back, and then the one left standing goes, I don't know, these are stupid
suggestions. They're the Leyland brothers. They could have their little map on the side of the Jeep.
And they could have their theme tune playing out a couple of speakers on the roof. I think the listeners can go way better than this. And, of course, there's a Sony Discman in the offing, courtesy of the Great Australian Taste 4-20 Pies. And, people, we've been talking about it, it seems like, all year. Doesn't it, from where I'm sitting?
Oh,
Ford Festiva, courtesy of the Ford Australian Open. We're finally going to give that bastard away this Friday.
Yeah.
Pete Smith's coming in to reach into the barrel this Friday, and the winner, every winner from Gladiators goes into the final draw for the Festiva. And, Mickey, were the Festivas in evidence in the Grand Prix? I know the drivers have been whining about airbags. Oh, we've got to have airbags. Sure, we're driving at 800 Ks, but we've got to have the airbags. And they're talking safety. Would it be perhaps, instead of just sticking the airbags in those cars they drive at the moment, what about Festivas? What about everyone in a Festiva? I mean, instead of, you know, seeing the emphasis on speed and dexterity, the emphasis could be on legroom and manoeuvrability.
And they could pull in, and pull in for a pit stop, and again, it's not speed. You just get out, you stretch the legs, check the map. Enjoy the, because that's what you do in a Ford Festiva. You wouldn't be in a hurry to get anywhere.
No.
You'd just be sitting on 60 cruise and going, how about me?
And so,
doesn't get any better than this.
And they could just be driving around, having a bit of a point, seeing some of the sights of Melbourne or Adelaide, and wearing a hat. Everybody has a hat on.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Sensible ideas for a better Grand Prix, but people, we want your suggestions for the Celebrity Grand Prix. Call now, 1-800-657-657. Ground that's simply red on Martin Molloy. It's Radio Gladiators. Today we're talking Celebrity Grand Prix. There's going to be another one next year in Melbourne. We're looking for a better lineup of celebrities for the Grand Prix. Mickey, what are the suggestions so far?
Well, we've got John on the line, and he's got something up his sleeve. What do you reckon, John?
I reckon Warwick and Joanne Capper.
Right.
But the only problem is, mate, the car wouldn't be too safe. They'd be praying for airbags, because it'd be just like them, totally stripped.
Exactly. We're happy to have airbags in the car. We just don't want them driving. That's the distinction in this particular case. Thanks anyway, John.
Okay.
Next up, it's Corey. Corey, who do you reckon should be in there?
Sally Mullock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, why would you like to see him taking part?
Oh, I reckon he could buy his way to the top.
Yeah, so he'd get to the end of the race and he'd be presented with a giant check and he'd just pass it to whoever came second. That's how it'd work.
Yeah, a bit like that.
I'd like to see him in that car because he's got no chance of winning that one for best cricketer of the international summer this year. Enjoy it now, Salim.
Okay, might happen. Thanks, Corey. Britta, is that your name, Britta?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, and what's your suggestion? Or who is your suggestion?
Kim Beazer. I want to see him squeeze in there. He doesn't even need an airbag.
You'd need that sticker on the back. Caution, wide load.
Definitely.
Kim Beazley, is he available? Mm. We'll attempt to find out. Thank you, Britta. Next up, Justin. Justin, who do you want to see in the Celebrity Grand Prix?
Well, I thought Christopher Skase.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we could get the wheelchair sticker on the front and possibly one of those oxygen masks popped down when the car got out of control.
And when he got a flat, he could just get out the tanks.
Yeah.
He'd be fine.
Exactly.
Okay. We'd have to get him out of here,
and
of course.
And you'd know his spot in the pits because it'd have the little handicapped marking thing on the asphalt.
Oh, yes.
For the wheelchair.
All right. We're trying. We're working with the tools we're given on Radio Gladiators. Thanks,
Justin.
I'm
still thinking about Kim Beazley. Yeah. I think it'd be more appropriate if he was in a gelati van, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, what are we talking
about? Oh, I'm sure you'll still be coming up with new Beazley gags in half an hour, Mickey.
I'll keep you posted.
Okay, next up, Paul. Paul, who would you like to see in there?
Well, Bubbles driving and Michael Jackson going, oh, if they're going to hit.
Michael Jackson, has he got his license, Michael Jackson?
No, I don't know. I think his chauffeur still drives him, but Bubbles is a good driver, I'm told.
Michael Jackson's driver's license, he'd have to go in every 6 months to get the photo changed, wouldn't it? Or would it just be that photo of his genitals at the cops? I don't know. Tell you what, just on a bit of an aside here, if you want to see something real scary, and, you know, where was the Woman's Day when it was Halloween last week? Because just get the Woman's Day. You don't have to buy it. Just go down the 7-Eleven, turn to page 3, and I'm telling you, there is the scariest photograph you will ever see of Michael Jackson. But enough of that. I don't want to frighten the kiddies. Mm. Thanks very much, Paul. Back to business. Have we got, is it Shivash?
No, it's not.
Oh, who are you?
It's Val.
Oh, hello, Val.
How you going, boy?
Not bad. Are you a contestant on Radio Gladiators?
Well, the phone was ringing, and you answered.
All right, what's your suggestion for the Celebrity Grand Prix?
Well, I've got a bit of a duo, I reckon, Arthur Tunstall and Bill Hines. Arthur's manoeuvred himself out of a few corners, and I think Bill should be there to flash his flashy little grin at the end of the winning post there.
Okay, Arthur Tunstall, is he available? Because he's got so much on his plate.
Oh, he certainly has.
And maybe we could get Kathy Freeman and Lionel running. All right, yes, I'm sure he would. Now, is there anybody else there, Gracie? Have we got no sign of Shivash? Okay, well, who's going to be our winner then, Mickey?
Well, I think we're going right back up the line to Corey with Saleh Malik. All right, are you there, Corey?
Yep.
And we've got no giant check for you, I'm afraid, but we do have a Sonny Discman with your name on it.
Beauty.
And you're in the running now for the Ford Festiva, which is being drawn this Friday.
Ripper.
And you could be in your own Celebrity Grand Prix, just driving around the block enjoying yourself, and that'll be this Friday. Thanks for taking part. Thanks to everybody who took part and everybody who didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with another Radio Gladiators tomorrow, and stick around, people, because after the news, we'll be joined by Michael Lunig.
This is Martin Malone.
Martin Malloy, we wheel in one. Pete Smith for his final week of duets. Mick takes us backstage at the AFI Awards, but next up we're talking to Michael Lunig. And as you know, it's all courtesy of Telstra Mobile Net Digital. Thinking about me, that's Sonia Dada here on Martin Malloy. It's the second hour. You ready for this, Mickey?
Oh, yeah.
You comfortable? I've just been out in the kitchen here at the station trying to construct a cup of coffee from the few available components. It's like that scene in Apollo 13 where they're making the oxygen filter from, you know, the vacuum cleaner pipe. I'm sitting there with an empty milk carton, a spoon and a Wettex going, is this enough? I don't think I've been successful either, but enough of our problems because it's time to welcome our guest. Folks, this bloke, he likes a draw, he likes a doodle. We've probably all got a bit of his work somewhere in the house, possibly up on the fridge. He's got a new book out, it's called You and Me. Here's Michael Lunig.
Well, Michael, thanks for coming in today.
Very lovely.
Now, you've got this new book here. I've got a copy of it here. It's called You and Me, and you describe it on the back as a rude and tender volume for the kitchen table. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. You know, something to just flick through while you're having a cup of tea in the afternoon. Something a bit shocking and a bit careful. Yeah. Like a plate of scones, I suppose.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that going to be a title at some stage? Did you throw that out early?
No.
Well, you've done a bag of roosters, so...
A plate of scones might be the next book.
Yeah. This is your 13th book, Michael. You superstitious at all?
Suddenly I am, yes.
Looking nervous. Yes, and it's a bit bigger than usual.
Yes, yes, yes. The only, some things get bigger, some things get smaller as we get older.
Are you heading towards a big coffee table retrospective? Are we looking towards one of those?
Well, we are actually, yes, a coffee table. But I observed the other day that I haven't seen a coffee table for quite a while. We speak of the coffee table, but where do we see the coffee table?
We presume it's just there.
Yes, we do.
But no one's investigated.
No.
It's a metaphysical coffee table. So 13 books, Michael. Can we go right back and can you tell us about when you started? I mean, obviously you would have been doing more rudimentary cartoons way back when.
I started doing things in the 60s. I was at university, like, and there was this Vietnam War, which was giving everyone the willies, you know, and I was conscripted, and there was a lot of censorship. And so these different climate then, and a rebellious feel, and all that music and stuff. And so I got going in the midst of all that. And it was easier to start then. It was easy to get published.
So in the middle of all this fervour and protest and history going on, you're doing pictures of ducks and teapots.
Well, that's interesting, because I didn't start doing ducks and teapots. I started doing political things, things about war and all, you know, the old conservatives and all that.
Can I ask you, did you ever do... like a cartoon of the SS economy sinking a ship? That's an old favourite within the cartoon.
Well, everyone's done it, so I must have done
it. That must be the slow news day or the slow cartoon day. Yeah, I love it when the cartoonist, he has to write on it what it is. So, like, it's a roller coaster and then he's got the economy.
Well, you know, that's right, exactly. Yeah,
or it's a cliff top. And someone's hanging off the top of the cliff that's got economy written on the side.
It's a big bag of clichés, really, old visual clichés. Yes, they're appalling, aren't they? And when you've got to label it, you're in a pretty sad state. I don't use labels because, well, why not? If I would, if I had to draw a politician like Mr. Keating, I would probably write on it Mr. Keating, because I can't draw people's faces.
No one would be buying it as Mr. Curley, really, would they?
No, I'm just tempted. I might set out to draw Mr. Keating, but it would end up as Mr. Curley, because I have more affection for Mr. Curley than most politicians.
Is that how it works? You were talking about Vietnam. Now, you're a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War.
Yes, I did register as a conscientious objector because I didn't want to go in this stupid war, and I thought it was a really terrible thing to do, to grab young blokes and send them off. But yes, there's a lot of hostility. I was spat on one occasion, and there was much abuse, and the neighbours heard you were a coward, as I said, and a traitor, and all these kind of, and a communist, etc. That was the mood back then.
Now, can you hold that thought, Michael? Can we prevail on you to stick around for another segment?
Oh, certainly, yes.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment with traitor, coward, and scone maker, Michael Learning, on Martin Molloy. CDB with Let's Groove here on
Martin Molloy.
And Michael Learning is still with us on the panel today. Michael, you were talking about your early days when you used to do a bit of the political cartooning. When did you actually turn the corner and develop your signature style?
I don't know. One day I had nothing more I wanted to say about politics. I thought it was relatively unimportant, and I drew a man riding on a duck with a teapot on his head. Because the deadline was coming up, I had nothing to say, but I had to fill that space, and that's what I did. And fortunately, the editor had been to a very big party the night before, and he was very hungover, which is true. And I took it to him, and it was 9:30 deadline. And he said, "Oh, I don't understand it, but I sort of like it." And you're a real, you know.
That's the reaction I think a lot of people have actually reading your cartoons themselves, Michael. I've heard that a fair bit. Well, I'm not quite sure what it is, but I like it.
Well, that's right. And I think if you can find that in people, a bit they don't understand, but they like, you're onto some good side of them, some good part of them, I think. I like that.
What is it about the duck that makes it so comedic. Because we went and saw Babe, this new film, a new film coming out soon by George Miller, and it's a beauty. It's an absolute beauty. But the duck is immediately assumes the role of the comical character.
There is something, isn't there? There's something. Everyone's got a good feeling about that. Not many. I've not met a man who dislikes a duck. they've got the round beak. They're not very menacing, are they? They're not menacing. They're kind of playful. They enjoy life's basics, you know, sleeping, eating. They preen themselves. And we used to do very rude things with them when they were young. We'd find they were willing to, you know, do a little courtship dance, should I say.
Now, you had a pet duck when you were a kid, didn't you, Mike?
I had a number of ducks. Yeah, once I bought some day-old ducks in the market, and they turned out there was only one duck and there were about five drakes, and they all grew up together and they all had a good sort of communal relationship.
Oh, good. Right.
But we found that whenever you put a big tub of water down in front of them, they'd all do this little dance, this ritual. It was their love dance, you see.
And that was how the birdie dance was brought up.
Yeah, and this was immensely comical. No, the innocent creatures and the goodly creatures, they won't hurt us, they lay eggs, they mind their own business. They seem to enjoy their life, but I reckon they're a good role model, a duck.
We can look to the duck and learn.
Michael, is there one particular cartoon that people mention to you in the street over the years as a favourite, as one that's stuck with them?
Not really, no.
Not really?
No.
Well, there's one I like, and it's from the Bedtime Learn again. Yeah. I think people driving home will identify with this. I often think of this when I'm stuck in the traffic, and it's the angel that comes down and basically gives the bloke a free lift home because he hasn't got a bumper sticker on his car and promises him one every week for the rest of his life. What inspired that? I think I can guess.
Well, you know, good people like that, if you don't have bumper stickers on your car, you're really like a saint. But where is the recognition for that, you know? Where is the recognition? So there's a guardian angel whom one day will lean down and say, well done, you had a T-shirt without a ridiculous inscription on the front.
Now, Michael, where's it all leading? You've done 13 books. What's it all heading for? What's going to be your final big one? What are you going to leave us with?
I don't know. That's a religious question almost.
Yeah, well, it's that kind of program, Michael. I don't know if you listen, but we tackle the big ones.
I don't know.
Are you still get excited about, you know, approaching the page and banging out cut. You're a work in progress.
I like it all. I've got this sort of relationship with my society now, I suppose. You know, I'm kind of, I don't feel like I'm just a fella who's doing these jokes or something. I'm connected to all this world I've grown up with, and people connect to me and write to me, and I do things for them. I feel like I'm in a big conversation.
You're
with
like
the world.
A cult leader.
This is very worrying.
You see Michael Looney in a room with 200 ducks.
We've unearthed a pretty severe cult here.
Yeah, no, I like it. I just want to, I like painting, and I like doing lots of different things, I guess. I like writing and stuff. Yeah.
Because you cross many different fields of the arts. I suppose you're categorised as a cartoonist, but quite often we'll open the page and be confronted with a bit of an essay.
That's right.
Do you set out to do that, or do you just, is wherever the idea takes you, the idea you set out with
I find is just the opening. That's the door you open and you walk through, and then it's got to take you somewhere. I always reckon if you get an idea, an inspiration, and you try and draw it, it doesn't work. The inspiration is just the door that opens, and you'll go in and you go through a terrible time and you end up doing this very simple little thing, you know. Funny thing, that.
Well, good luck with your simple little things, Michael Learning.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming in on the program today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And You and Me is in the shops now, and look for it with the name Michael Learning on the cover. That's the only advice I can give. Mm. And we'll be back with more in a moment on Martin Molloy. It's Martin Molloy here in excess. Sorry about that, people. We've been caught pants down. If you listen closely, just listen. You can hear the sound of the belts hitting the floor because we're sitting on something big for Duet with Pete.
You said that, but what are you flipping through? You're a disgrace.
I'm sitting here with a cassette in front of me called You Sing the Hits, and I'm looking at some of the possibilities for Duet with Pete. I'm thinking maybe we should extend this thing for another 6 months.
You think so?
And just go through the full You Sing the Hits collection. Did you know that there's a You Sing the Hits cassette which is just entirely the songs now?
Oh.
Is that going to be two songs
Where
on that tape?
Where do you get it?
There's plenty of ammunition for the segment, but tell you what, shall we get it fired up?
Let's do it.
Okay, Pete, take it away!
Have you ever dreamed of singing a duet with one of the greatest voices of the century? No, I'm not talking about Roy Orbison, Dame Joan Sutherland, Tom Waits, or Billy Ray Cyrus. It's me, Mr. Copperart, Pete Smith.
But you made me feel...
Yeah, you made me feel...
Shiny and new.
Ooh. Oh, like a virgin.
Touched for the very first time.
Like a virgin.
When your heart beats... Next to mine.
Simply by calling Martin Malloy and performing a duet with Pete, you can realize that dream and bag yourself a fabulous prize. Firstly, every performer gets the Die Hard prize pack, featuring Die Hard with a Vengeance on home video. You remember Die Hard with a Vengeance? It's the one where Bruce Willis has to drive a car really fast. Then, if your duet scores more than 5 out of 10 from our judges, you're in the draw for that brand new Ford Festiva, courtesy of the Ford Australian Open. Today's selection is Barry Manilow's Copacabana. Naturally, I'll be playing Rico. Lads, bring me my Lola.
Okay, Pete. We've got it back together here on the segment. It's Barry Manilow. Any advice for young players on the Barry Manilow, Mick?
Put on some tight satin pants.
That could help.
And tie up your shirt. Undo the buttons and tie it up. And you're ready to roll.
And obviously the big nose, that's just, it's up to you whether you want to go with that. Okay, but you'll need a pen and paper. Have we got the sexy pen and paper music? Yes. There you go. Go over to the sideboard. That's it. Rub a lot of baby oil on yourself. Okay, now forget that. And out of the kitchen. Over there. Down the back of the fridge. Yes, it's probably... It's falling down the back of the
Behind you.
Okay, I think that's enough sexy pen and paper music for one day. Thanks, Gracie. And, of course, our producer playing all the music live on the show.
Yep.
As always, if you'd like to sing Copacabana with Pete Smith, if that isn't a dream come true, I don't know what else we're going to offer people. Call us now, 1-800-657-657. Come back to Martin Malloy as we pull on the safari suits and step into the Vegas lounge for another duet with Pete Smith. Mickey, who have you got for us today?
We've got a showgirl named Annie on the line. G'day, Annie.
G'day.
Congratulations to you. Are you ready to go?
Yep, ready and willing.
Do you like the song?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, you're into it. And what about Pete? Do you like his work?
Oh, he's just brilliant.
Have you been enjoying his singing style on the segment?
Oh, he's my hero.
Because, you know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners didn't realise he had that much musical talent in him. But we're drawing it out slowly but surely. And let's not draw this out any longer. Here comes Copacabana with Annie and Pete and the Showbiz.
Her name was Lola.
She was a showgirl
with yellow feathers in her hair.
And a dress that down to bed.
She would merengue
and do the cha-cha.
And while she tried to be a star,
Tony always tended far.
Across the crowded floor,
they were 2 8 till 4.
They were young and they had each other.
Who could ask for more?
At the Copa.
Copacabana.
The hottest spot north of Havana.
At the Copa.
Copacabana.
Music and passion were always a fashion. At the Copa.
At the Copa.
They fell in love.
Pete stormed out, Eddie. You were doing some of his lines.
Oh, no, I missed him.
You've squeezed him out of the duet.
You've attempted something that nobody else has on the segment to date, and that is you've tried a bit of harmony work with Mr. Copperard there. And you started a bit, it was a bit like a bit of a celebrity Grand Prix race in itself there, wasn't it? It was a bit shaky at the start, but there was a good bit in the middle. So, Mickey, what do you reckon?
Oh, she's in there with a dead set chance. I've given her a big 7.
Oh, 7! And Annie, this means firstly, well, you know you've got the Die Hard prize pack.
Oh, great.
Yeah, have you seen Die Hard with a Vengeance?
Yes.
Oh, you've seen it already?
Yeah.
But you'd be keen to see stuff blowing up again on your telly, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. Especially if it was Bruce Willis.
Oh, really? You're a fan of his work?
Oh, I'm just, a fan, definitely.
Did you see
about a guy in singlet and no shoes that just really trips Annie's trigger?
Has a lot of bad days, doesn't he?
Did you see him on that, he does, on the David Letterman program the other night? He did a fair bit of stunt work, jumping off a ute and smashing his head in on the set, which was very impressive.
No, I missed that.
Oh, it was very spectacular, but it was on to about 4 a.m, so I can understand if you didn't see it now. You've also gone into the draw for the Ford Festiva.
Excellent.
And that's being drawn this Friday. And I understand, Mickey, that Barry Manilow, when he travels around America on his big tour, he goes around a fleet of about 78 Festivas. And
does
just,
he?
Yeah, about 80 of them are just chock full of his clothing.
I'm more concerned about the line in the song that says, Tony always tended bar. Anyone we know, Tony?
Well, it's...
Can you place yourself at the scene of the crime at the Copa?
I didn't want my name on the record label when they published it, but the APRA fees are coming in, so I'm doing well with the Barry number. But thanks very much for taking part, Annie.
You're welcome.
And be listening Friday for the big draw.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back with another duet, folks, tomorrow on Martin Molloy.
Union of Souls here on Martin Molloy, or someone called them to me the other day. Mate, I love that song you play by the Blessed Onion of Souls.
So maybe we'll just call them Blessed Onion of Souls from now on, just to keep that bloke happy. And Mickey, I know you get out and about. You're at all the big celebrity openings and all the big do's and shindigs and wingdings, but you were there. I saw a little shot of you on the telly the other night at the AFI Awards. Mm. Got any gossip, anything backstage you can tell us about?
Well, what can I tell you? I arrived there and I knew it was celebrities were pretty thin on the ice when I arrived because someone actually bothered to take my picture. I thought, I mustn't be looking too good inside.
Yeah.
And, I got inside, took my seat and watched the whole thing transpire, and it was fairly ordinary, I think.
It was fairly.
I'm not mucking around.
Have you ever seen a less appealing collection of films? I'm sitting there going...
No, I don't think anyone's seen the films. That's my point.
I'm sitting
How can you give awards to something that people haven't seen?
I know this is incredibly unpatriotic, but I'm sitting there and the clip of Pulp Fiction comes up, and I'm going, there's a movie. There's one I want to see.
So I move forward in my seat. I'm going, this is interesting. But I couldn't help feeling like if you're going to give awards to films that, obviously you're saying... The audience doesn't matter because you haven't even bothered to show some of these films to an audience. So basically this is a set of awards for people who make films for filmmakers. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what the public think. They're going to give themselves awards anyway.
It's like the award for the best film that hasn't come out yet.
Exactly.
Award for the best film that's going straight to video.
Exactly.
Award for the best film that's going to be up behind that old faded copy of Splash in the Blockbuster in about 2 months' time.
Tell you a couple of awards I could have given out. Biggest clanger on the night. Some of those jokes, I'm serious. There's our incinerator has sprung a leak, and I don't know what to do, but are we checking that? Is it destroying our jokes, our incinerators? Because I'm sitting there, I'm listening to Larry Fortensky and Liz Taylor jokes, and I'm going, hang on a second, what's going on here?
And what about the set? I love it. Somebody's thought it's a movie awards. Strips of film with sprocket holes and maybe some of them big reels of film. And I'm sitting there, I'm hitting my telly, I'm going, is this from 1972? Is this an old Logies? And as for celebrities, Jason Donovan, I don't know what his story was.
He was sitting about three doors down.
He looked like he might have been...
If he could sit in his seat long enough.
He looked like he might have been on the verge of one of his famous asthma attacks.
Mm.
And had he just stuck his head in a fan before he's gone out there? What was with the hair?
I don't know, I was just standing by with a jacket, Viper Room style. And Casey just went ass over. I was going to cover him up and take him out so no one knew what was going on.
And, congratulations to our very good friends down at Frontline. A well-deserved win there for several awards. But and I don't mean to belittle their achievements.
Well, I certainly hope you're not about to.
But, you've got to ask what's going on when individual episodes of Echo Point are being nominated in some of the categories.
Judith Leacy would have been rapt because at one stage in our Premier Premier Film Industry Awards, the whole stage is dominated by a close-up for the guy in the Pizza Hut end. And I'm going, someone's taken a wrong turn somewhere.
And what's the deal with the...
It's Dougie.
It's the ABC. It's the ABC, and we've got the Berger Paints Award for Best Supporting Actor. Mm. We've got the Mitre 10 Award for Best Film. What's going on there? Mm. Is that something to do with Steve Vizard? Has he lined that up? Is that his way of getting a bit of extra cash out of the whole deal?
Making a bit of a deal about it. And where were the celebs?
But can you do that on the ABC? Could you have like an episode of GP where someone comes in and goes, oh, I'm afraid you're going to have to give somebody a Sanyo tracheotomy. Really? Well, I'll just rush them down to the Food Plus emergency room. Is that allowed on this?
I don't think it is.
Regulations on the
ABC? Well, an inquiry should be underway into that and many others. Celebrities, where were they? Hello. The biggest storm in the room was everyone. The whisper around, over there. It's Ocean Girl. That was what was dominating proceedings.
And one thing finally that we should mention is there was a bit of talk in the papers yesterday. Mm. I understand a celebrity who nobody's allowed to name was caught in the toilets with what's described in the newspaper as a bong, which I'm not sure what that means. Mm. Something to do with a wacky tobacco, I'm not sure. Any ideas, Mickey? Who that?
No, but I'd like it back. And no one was owning up to that. But I reckon what the AFI...
It wasn't Jeff Kennett, was it,
Mickey? Well, I can't say too much, Tone. Okay. It could affect my grant. But the thing that I thought was, if the people at the AFI just got a bit more clever, the awards they're handing out, they could hand out in the shape of a bong. And that way, you know, it would be more discreet. People would get away with it. And look at that guy. Is he stoned off his head? No. He's just one of our premier filmmakers.
So people could go home, put the award to use, and suddenly some of those films would be watchable.
Absolutely.
Got at the moment, it appears to be based on Bruno Grollo's design for the biggest building in the world. That's Barnsley. Ain't no mountain high enough here on Martin Malloy. And Mickey, the cricket's behind us, is it now? Because I don't really follow it. Is it all over?
It's all over, wrapped up a day and a half early. And, well, after all the speculation and all the rumours and all the innuendo, no one can really be too surprised by its
outcome.
It's outcome, and I'm looking for a word. It's not peremptory. I'm thinking it's premature. That'll do. It's premature conclusion.
You're a living thesaurus.
Yeah,
before.
Well, we got there eventually, didn't we? Oh, I feel like I need a bit of a hug there. But anyway,
I think you're up for a presenting role on the AFIs next year.
This is one of those wacky two-handers. And anyway, in case you missed all the action, here's a broadcast from earlier in the day.
Welcome back to the Gabba for the first test between Pakistan and Australia. Well, we played a very interesting stage here. The Australians are batting well, didn't lose a wicket in this session. Surprising, really, considering the Pakistani bowlers threw everything at them, including a shitload of cash. But the batsmen, to their credit, withstood the challenge, and play's about to begin. We rejoin your commentators, Tony Grigg and Max Walker.
Thanks, Richie. Well, the Australians getting the upper hand here. Bookmakers have them slight favourites now. A lot of money changing hands on this game, and not just on the field, Maxie.
Yes, we saw some magnificent transactions in the first session. Pakistan nearly had the early breakthrough when Slater was caught in the slips, thumbing through a briefcase full of cash. But no luck on that occasion for the Pakistanis.
Yes, and play gets underway here. Akram coming in from the city end with the new checkbook. He bowls. There's an appeal. Yes, got him. Boone's on his way. Didn't even wait for the umpire's decision. He's walking and all the way to the bank by the looks of it. And perfect timing, just after lunch, so he should miss the lengthy queues.
Yes, he might encounter a couple of next teleflea signs, but overall he'll be happy with that. I thought he might have gone for the thinking music to see if he wanted to play on for the car. But he's made his decision, and he's on his way.
Let's take a look at the replay now. There's the delivery straight into the pocket, and a good decision there, as you can clearly see. The keeper getting into the action as well, slipping a 20 into Booney's underpants.
Yes, it reminds me of the time I slipped a 20 into Booney's underpants. Not for playing poorly, but for one of the best lap dances I've ever had. It was an absolute beauty. One of those, oh, I can touch you, but you can't touch me, Jobs. Reminds me of the lap dance I had back in 79. A young Lenny Pascoe.
Sorry to interrupt, Maxie, but the Australians have declared their innings. Not surprising, really, when you consider those armour guard vans turned up at the Australian dressing room. Just before play resumed, and the Australian captain, obviously keen to get down to the bank during trading hours, as he often has trouble remembering his pin number. Back to you, Richie.
Thanks, Tony. And let's take a look at the Australian scorecard. Taylor, out for a check. Slater, caught with a couple of grand, gaffer taped to his chest. Waugh retired to the Bahamas. And Mark Waugh out yet again for a golden handshake. The only controversial decision today was the dismissal of keeper Ian Healy after he received a dud check from the Pakistani opening bowler, making him the first batsman to fall victim to a bouncer in this series. We won't know if any other duds have been passed till the fifth and final day, when traditionally the checks are cleared.
Well, open your heart, winding up another round of Martin Molloy. And just before we go, is there just time to mention this program?
Go it's, on, you know you
want to. It's on Channel 7 tonight at 8.30. It's called Seven Salute to Comedy. Mm. They should have brackets, that was on Channel 7.
It's Seven Salute to 7, I'm afraid, any way you look at it.
It's Andrew Dada coming out and pointing at a whole lot of old clips. Mm. That's basically what it is. And I have to say, if you want to plough through it, because it's a bit of a big watch, but if you want to hang in there, you'll see some pretty embarrassing performances by Mick and myself. We've been sitting there having the audacity, the gall, to cane into the AFIs. Yeah. And I tell you what, we wouldn't get onto Echo Point with the performances you'll see from us tonight, and quite a while ago. So, you know, pretty
fun.
Very
youthful.
Yeah.
Very young Tony Martin. It was very dapper.
There was back in the 50s.
Before all that trouble.
It was back in the 50s when we used to work with Gordon Chater. So check that out and have a good laugh at how embarrassing, really. So I'm telling you, you haven't seen acting like this since... Well, probably since the AFI Awards, probably, really. And did we get everything there? I know you were a big fan of Paul Mercurio's work, and we all are, as evidenced by the numbers of people who have shown up for Back and Beyond.
He was pretty...
That'll be up for Best Picture next year, won't it? You wait, there it'll be. It's a mineral water ad, from what I can tell from the commercial. That'll be up for Best Picture.
It's one of those film clips. Someone's gone into a room and said, it's the desert. And we put a neon sign in the desert. And someone's gone, brilliant, $8 million. Yours. Spend it wisely. That's what the neon sign in the middle of the desert should say. $8 million down the drain, just flashing at you.
Well, the sign's flashing at us is your time is up.
Oh,
so
no.
We've got to get out of here. And thanks to our guests, Michael Lunig, Robin Archer, and all our gladiators. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Kate Sobrano. But until then, remember, if you can't say something intelligent, come talk to us.